I began to see that the light was, it was interactive, and it was changing and flickering when there was no change in the daylight.
Hi, I'm Wendy, and this is Wendy's Coffee House. My guest is actually interviewing me, Tricia Brown. She's going to talk to me about my book, Talking to Night Lights 2, and we'll talk about some other stuff too, paranormal stuff that we've experienced. So hang in there. Maybe you've had some of these experiences too.
Hi, my name is Tricia Brown, and I have been a lifelong explorer of interesting topics like life after death and spiritual matters, mind, body, spirit. I've had profound spiritual experiences since I was about 2. So I started purposefully learning about spiritual matters when I was probably about 4th grade. I started having where I know now that I was receiving guidance. And then along the way, my abilities were happening. I was having visitations and just on and on. And it's very similar to, you know, Wendy's experience, but different, the progression of it. And then wanting to find the right words to describe, and then wanting to develop the abilities. And so in my journey of enjoying connecting with others who are like-minded, I was in a process in my life of transitioning from years of dental assisting to then going back to school again. And then while going to school, and I'm talking about from like 2010 to 2014, I became a personal assistant. And so I would work in people's homes, and I was also doing dog training and dog sitting. And so I had lots of time in people's homes to just feel relaxed. And I would turn on like audio books and podcasts. And I came upon Empower Radio and found some specific people that were talking about things that like lit me up and made sense to me. And I was learning from too. And Wendy was one of those people. David Franklin Farkas was another, and Tammy Balashevsky. Those, you three were like, I focused on. And so I would just listen on and on, and I learned a lot. And these are people who make sense for me, who are resonating with who I am, and who would be my friends, who I would love to talk to and have talked to me and learned from each other, and you know, all that. So that was going on. That was, I think that was like 2013 or something, 2012. So it started from there. And then as I've listened to you, Wendy, become more talking about your paranormal experiences and your life, and it's been interesting to learn about it. And then I read your first book, and then you would talk about on your podcast how you were wanting to do another book, but not yet. And when it was it going to happen? And, you know, and then all of a sudden I find out recently that you did it. And I'm like, yay, oh my God, good for you. And then you've been, you know, when you have a podcast, when it's not someone that you're interviewing, you're doing your talkings and you're saying really cool stuff, and you've been talking about it. And then, you know, I said to you, you know what, you need to be interviewed, because you have interviewed so many people and you're really good at it. And I wanted you to be able to have your time to speak and be on the opposite end of it. Uh-huh. And I wanted to give that to you to do that. And I feel like in some of like listening to you, you were more maybe, I wasn't sure, maybe more hesitant to want to be speaking about you. You wanted to kind of continue to kind of revert it back to the other person, but then you would sometimes slide in like some of your experiences, and I was like, yes, keep doing that. That's kind of like how the story, yeah, about it.
Thank you. It's so fun because you and I have talked before, and you have an extraordinary desire to connect and to learn and to find out through firsthand experience what the world is like for other people. You are so curious, and I love that. That was what was, from the beginning, why I felt a connection to you. We talked before, but you have a fantastic relationship with your bird and your animals, your pets. Okay. Yes. So anyone who sees pictures will see Manny, this incredible bird, who is Manny 25 or 26 now?
25, almost 26 in August.
Okay. All right.
Wow, you're good.
Well, I just remember, and there's, you don't forget. I appreciate you being curious and wanting to turn the tables. And yes, I try to avoid putting myself in this spot.
I knew it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my background is broadcasting. And so the struggle I had is interviewing people and not dominating. So that was a learning thing of letting people completely tell their story and not getting into it. And then when my story is happening, trying to develop a way of becoming a little more forthcoming and including my stuff without feeling like I'm trying to take away from whoever it is I'm interviewing.
What was it like when you were getting to interview people like Jimmy Carter and Wayne Dyer and John Denver and like on and on? It's like Mr. Rogers.
Oh yeah. Okay. Okay. No.
Wow.
Some of these were part of a group. My co-host, he's deceased now, and he was the host of the show. He was a character, a wild card. And one of the things he asked, he said, "Jimmy, did you have your orange juice today?" Or so it was just really off the wall. You never knew he was going to say, but it was great. And I also stood in line to get an autographed book, and opportunities like with John Denver. I had been a fan since, you know, I was a kid watching
Little
him
girl,
on the Midnight
12.
Special. Yeah. Yeah. Watching
him
on the Midnight
God,
Special.
Oh my God. I love that show. Oh my God. I love that show.
It was so fun. Yeah. And so when I did interview him, he had just had another DUI. That was what the media was focused on. And so they were careful when they booked him. And at the very beginning of that interview, he was a little bit, he was braced.
Yeah, you can probably feel his tenseness.
He was braced. And I told him there was a song that I liked that I knew wasn't released on the radio called Grandma's Feather Bed, but I knew that it was a special one for him. And
that's
when I
what
said
you do,
that,
by the way, when you're wanting to set up, like whether you're doing a reading with someone or you start off high. You bring it high.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was just, it was natural. I was a fan already. So, but I didn't want him to feel that he was going to be, you know, put under the spotlight and basically sunk because of all of the media that was happening. And I was so glad because he was very warm. He invited me. He was performing at that time. This is Topeka, which is in the middle of the country, is a small venue, but big for our area. He invited me to the show. And I, you know, if I had been younger, I would have gone, but I wanted to remember him as the fantasy that I had. Yeah. I said, no, thank you. And he was gone a year later. He crashed.
So that was 96 then, right?
Yeah, 96. I believe the death was 97.
97. I was in Monterey an hour before he crashed.
Oh, really?
Yes. That was so trippy. We were there that day, me and my boyfriend, and we drove back over the hill, back to Saratoga area, California, where I'm from. And then we heard it on the radio. I couldn't believe it.
Knowing the way that he lived his life, he went out on a high. He loved doing what he did. Those experimental planes, that was his joy. But I also had an experience with him. There was something, I don't know, I was watching and thinking about the something.
You were, it was about the, it was a like a, you were, it was the stars. Like a
meteor
something, shows. A night. Yes, there we go. The night sky thing.
Yeah. And so then I'm channeling without even thinking about it. All of a sudden I'm having a conversation with him, and he told me that was one of his favorite times, the Perseid meteor showers. So I had to go look it up to make sure that this conversation was legit. And that's one of the first times doing my, you know, PSI
that's
stuff
amazing.
That I was realizing I connected with other people once they passed.
So, yes. And you know what? I have had experiences like that too. So I found it. So we're talking about her book, Talking to Nightlights 2. And this is on page 25. And he came to her later, which is amazing, which shows, you know, when you connect with someone, it's timeless. You made a positive effect on him. And he appreciated it so much that he came to you when you were like, You know, it says, I did connect with him again after he died. It was a spontaneous encounter coinciding with the Perseid.
They come Perseid up in August.
Meteor showers. Yes, that's right. He showed up and told me he loved to watch meteor showers. I think that's so special. Did you hear him? Did you hear his voice?
You know, I don't remember hearing a specific voice because in the singing, what I get is more, you know, telepathic with the language, the words, all of that. And it doesn't even, it's not an auditory. It just comes through you. And so,
a knowing, yeah, a feeling.
Well, and the sentences, the paragraphs, the conversation, it's all right there, but it's not.
Okay, isn't something, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it isn't like somebody standing beside me whispering in my ear, which has happened when I needed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, wow.
And it was like life or death. Yeah. Uh-huh.
They're there. Yeah. Okay. I know what you mean. Cool.
The thing about his music, just real quick, the thing about his music is that after I went through some of these experiences, I would hear cues and tones and almost like a telephone ringing when I listened to his music. I don't know anybody else would hear it, but for me, it was transcendent. And so after,
like a frequency.
This started in 2009 that I would hear little cues and tones in his music. And I'm like, what the heck? What the heck?
Okay.
Yeah. So just FYI, I didn't write about that.
That's a special thing for these conversations.
Behind the scenes.
I was having experiences like how you describe, you kind of in your book, you describe, you know, the experience that happened when you were 4 or 5 with your imaginary friend. And then, you know, when you were 13, I think it was when you were 13, when you heard the voice tell you to run or to go. The progression when you were 28, like there were these different progressions of these different experiences throughout your life.
I tried to put more of that in there to say that this wasn't like an overnight all of a sudden. It also, for me, when people said, well, you're psychic, I'm not. That's just not me. You know, immediately.
Oh,
when
really?
When anybody tried to put these words on me, I was like, because I know.
Don't label me that. Yes. Don't put a label on me.
I knew that there was a stigma that went with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had a great aunt along the line who was living in a small town in Kansas, and in her front yard, she had a sign that said psychic on it. Okay. I didn't find that out till after I was having these experiences. Yeah. And they said, oh, well, you had an aunt who, you know, lived down in a small town in Kansas, and that was what she did. And I'm like, wow. And that doesn't mean I'm her, but it means that in the family, there were other people who were open to it. I just wasn't as connected at that time because, again, you know, in different parts of our culture, different types of belief systems throughout, you know, worldwide, there are places that are open. And like Lilydale, that's where all the psychics go, the mediums, they, you know, and then you have to take a test to get in there. Those places I wasn't familiar with. The closest thing I had was Menninger's in Topeka, and they studied all sorts of,
I've never heard of that.
Oh, biofeedback, Alice and Elmer Green. Yes. Yeah, that was.
Oh, okay.
That was one place that I was so fascinated by because they studied people. Rolling Thunder, Native American medicine man, was a presenter at one of their events and did some phenomenal things. That was my experience.
There's so many things that, like, you talk about that I'm like, let's tangent and go in that direction because it's all so interesting to me. Oh, my gosh. In your progression, when you realized that there was something going on with the nightlight in your house that you were living in, this renovation project that you were on with your husband, and you guys were living in the attic. And you were putting the night lights throughout the house to make it feel more homey, which I get that. Mm-hmm. I like night lights too. You all of a sudden realize that in the kitchen. Now tell us the story.
It's an automatic light. So what can happen with an automatic night light is a cloud goes by and the room goes dark and the night light comes on. Well, the thing is nothing would change and the light would flicker. And so I began to see that the light was a little bit, it was interactive and it was changing and flickering when there was no change in the daylight. I watched to see if people who visited the house would have any reaction.
Did they notice?
Nobody noticed because it was a nightlight. They didn't pay any attention to it. They just, it's too little. It's nothing. Most people aren't tuned in.
I totally noticed that. kind of stuff a lot. It happens to me too, a lot.
Once this started happening, then I realized I needed to figure out a way to communicate. And that was, at first, my mom and my aunt, we had a pendulum session because my mom has always used a pendulum to help, you know, with spiritual guidance. And especially when things are challenging and it's like, am I doing the right thing? And trying to get a bead on where you are. And that's what happened. There was a whole lot of stuff up and upheaval. The show was ending. The morning that we were doing that collaboration, they needed, it was a money thing. There were five of us and then they got one and the new one was there for only about 6 months, but it was a way of to changing everything without saying there was a, you know, without being sued.
They kept downsizing.
For me, it was needed, but it was very traumatic because all of a sudden, here I'd had this wonderful venue, and it was gone.
You were wanting something more, and that was the way.
Yes. They didn't tell me the fine print of, okay, you're going to lose this first. No.
Yeah.
You don't expect that. You don't expect the things that you have
you
to
You needed
just
it because you were distracted with this other, your mind was focused on other things, and you did need to have something where you were had freedom to think about and focus on this other stuff.
Because then it was front and center. Now I did go back into news for a short while, and then that 9/11 happened. And when 9/11 happened, I really very quickly decided that I wasn't able to help anybody by broadcasting the daily news, the daily trauma, the daily chaos.
Yeah,
because all you're doing, you're parroting it. And it that's not a news maker, that's a news regurgitator. And it was tough because I really enjoy news. But the kind of news I like the stuff that's offbeat, the stuff that you're not going to get in the 5 o'clock headlines.
Exactly, yeah. And it's like sometimes it's like the last 30 seconds of the news.
It's the kicker. It's the kicker. That was my favorite. I always included the kicker because I wanted to leave people with hope, with a way out instead of just the doom and gloom.
Yeah.
We're very, very vulnerable. We respond to emotion. We respond to vibes. We respond to joy, all of these things. And when you're constantly pumping out the negative stuff, it may be happening. But when you put that front and center, then people really very quickly become depressed, sad, angry, you know, all of the stuff that we don't want to be. That it's a challenge when you're doing a news program that constantly manufactures and regurgitates that stuff to keep your head straight and not get pulled sucked under, you know. And so that when 9/11 happened, I stepped out. I said, this is a big one. I don't need to be here for the others. They're coming.
Okay.
I just don't need to be in the anchor chair.
That was enough. That was sort of like the last straw type thing.
When I had achieved what I wanted, I was the anchor and I had called the shots. I knew how to stack the news. I knew how I wanted to make it sing. Okay.
It's kind of Oprah's similar way that she would rather be talking about more important things than what she was.
Yeah. I mean, your headlines, they're regurgitated. Every 15 minutes, you're going to have a something different or a different way to approach it or lead with it. And, you know, especially now with all of the, I'm not going to focus on anything at the moment, but all the chaos.
Yeah, there you go.
Incredibly negative circumstances all over the world. There are tragic events happening, playing out. And if that's your focus, boy, your body's going to deteriorate really quickly because we are also impacted by the stuff that we are reading constantly or speaking constantly. It was an eye opener for me. I needed to see that.
So you had time then to focus more on what you were able to realize that the nightlight was trying to communicate with you. And you're like, I want to know how.
So I had to learn to channel. And at first I was doing automatic writing. And so
you were working with your aunt.
Working with hypnotherapy. What we would do, and this was 3 years. The first year it was just me figuring out how I'm channeling through my body, how I'm listening and how it's coming through. First it's the automatic writing and I would type so fast. I was worried about typos and I was told, forget it, just fix it later. Mm-hmm. You know, don't stop the train.
So you could be like typing b b b b b b b.
Yeah, like okay, no, just relax and let it get out, and then go back and fix it. And so when I would do these channel sessions, this stuff would just come out, and it was words I didn't normally use. each of us has the ability to channel, but we only have a certain vocabulary, a certain encyclopedia that we are able to access. And so to be a better channel, we need to have a broader base of content to pull from. And then you have to decide what you're going to channel. I got a lot of really interesting characters at the beginning to show me just exactly that there's a lot to pull from. And do you really want to bring these characters in, or do you want to continue to go up where it's something that's a little bit more
helpful,
a higher vibration?
Meaningful, life affecting in positive ways, all that,
Yeah, because the characters are entertaining. And but
really,
what I experienced with that, because they would have their own little, you know, sometimes they would have an affectation, kind of a different speech or a different accent. And one was like a curmudgeon, almost felt like a troll. At one point, I got something that was negative toward my aunt. And when I, when that happened, I had a bruise at the base of my spine. That's the root chakra.
Wow.
Like getting kicked in the
butt. Wow.
Because I had done this, I had allowed that negative energy to flow through me. And so I had a, you know, that was a backlash. And I understood then, okay, this is real. This energy that we connect to, when we work with those base spirits that can put us in that space. And so I thought, nope, I'm going to keep going up the chakras.
Again, my guest, Tricia Brown, The Switch Up, interviewing me, but she's also sharing some of her own experiences. And we'll continue after this short break. Tricia and I have had a lot of interesting paranormal experiences, and you might identify with some of these as well.
Before this happened, this is maybe 10 years before that, I was meditating and just opening for higher guidance and trying to begin to become more intentional in my experiences.
Oh, wow. I went through that same exact, wanting. What time frame was that for you?
It would have been 87, or when I had my out-of-body experience and I was in four places, just kind of in between. I found myself up on the ceiling, looking down at the body on the bed. I was also a glowing orb about the size of a basketball hovering above the solar plexus of my body. And I realized when I was in those three places, the body, the light, and the other astral plane, that I was three. I was, this is like the Trinity. Yeah. I'm like, whoa, mind, body, spirit. And here I am.
Yeah.
Plus there's the observer. So that's kind of four. So I have, you know, been able to figure out that's four dimensions, which is incredible, because I'm all and none of those positions. That was, again, 10 years earlier. So I knew that, for one thing, I'm looking at myself as this glowing orb, and still able to see from that orb with no eyes my body on the bed underneath me. That was a nine.
Eye-opening.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, there's another one where it's the same kind of thing, but the guides, at this point, when I'm working with my aunt, they're giving me this count to two and saying, we're going to, and I don't remember the exact language. I may have it written down somewhere, but the exact language was, there was going to be a count to two, and they would take me home, or they would show me, you know, the something. And I'm thinking, what can you show me? And yeah, count to two. So as I'm thinking this, then my aunt is counting, and I'm going to one. And all of a sudden I am out of my, I just melt. I'm like everywhere and nowhere. And it's, there is no language that describes the bliss, the moment that you have this. It's like an explosion. You're all of a sudden, you're just poof, gone. And it was so wonderful. I wanted to stay there. So I'm feeling all of this, where I am nothing and no one. There's no barriers. There's no boundaries. There's no limit.
Limitless.
Oh God. That is still the most amazing experience that I have ever had. And then when she counted, when that was one, and then she said two, and I knew if I did not come back and center myself, that I would be split, because I was so far out and beyond. So that was, I thought, okay, I guess these guys know what they're doing.
You know what, when you mentioned that about the knowing that you needed to come back, in my spiritual study school, when I went in 2015, we would do these dual meditations. We would lay on the floor and hold hands and do a little pre-connecting each other to the light. And so that way we would help each other as we were describing to each other what we were seeing. It kept us grounded.
Yeah. Yeah. Having her there with this, my aunt, the vibration, the frequency, her saying something, two was my cue, you're back. Had no idea what to expect. Had no idea what to expect. And so, but that was, again, this is my guides through me telling me, okay, step aside, you step to the right, you're out of your body, you're channeling, the body is doing something else, and you're in between. And as they are giving the words from me to her to tell me how to do this, this is where, you know, you get dizzy very quickly.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. where is this coming from? But that was how it worked, because she was the grounding for me to be able to work with the guides and then working, you know, through me. They threw me out of my body at one point another time so I could see again from a different vantage point. Only this time it was a different dimension where everything was black except for the little thing that was on beneath me, that where I was sitting on the couch. And it looked like a little multicolored egg. It had a little white around it, and then inside was all these different colors. And I knew that was me. And I was shown my seven blocks, the things I would be working on during this lifetime. And then,
amazing.
Yeah, connection with my mom and who she was in a past life. But all this stuff that they needed me to see, to say, this is, it's kind of like going home and touching base and saying, okay, here's where you are right now. And this is another piece of your puzzle that might be helpful. And then, of course, you'd take about 6 months to figure out what the heck that was.
Right. Or sometimes 10 years.
Yes, 20. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so those kinds of things became my reality, my normal.
Okay, yeah. And then you would go to work and be a totally different, you know, I've experienced that. You know, I mean, I've done things, my yoga teacher training, you're in an ashram for like 6 weeks, and they didn't prepare you for going back out into the world, and life is totally different. You feel more sensitive, and like, you know, I get it. You have to like go be with like the muggles and try to figure out how to, you know, interact with things that don't matter to you.
Right. Well, and the things you can see are so temporary and so limiting, because if that's where you're focused in, then things aren't going to change. As long as you continue bringing the same old pattern, then until you respond to that pattern differently, it's going to perpetuate or repeat. And that's, you know, we're in a cycle like that right now, where it may be a new scenario, but the actions and the emotions haven't upgraded enough to say, okay, here's the next level. It's coming. But right now, it's hard to watch.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying that's why it is needed to do things like going to work and being in a very grounded and day-to-day mundane environment, so you can see the cycle. You can see, okay, this continues to repeat. And why does it repeat? Because the actions are the same. And you can, I mean, we have times in our history that things are happening right now have happened before. Might have had different faces and different names, but it's the same emotional scenario. And so that's what we are asked to do, is we're challenged to deal with our emotions, whether it's anger, whether it's love.
It's so important to know that we are emotional beings. It's our GPS.
That's why there's so much interest from entities, because we're basically like a jacuzzi.
Explain deeper.
Well, sometimes the jacuzzi isn't turned on, so it's really boring. Get two or three people in a jacuzzi and you turn the water up, all of a sudden it's all sorts of fun. And, you know, when we're having a very passionate conversation with somebody, no matter what kind of emotion is there, that's when the entities are saying, cool. But knowing that sometimes that's what's happening when you go into a space that's extremely haunted or had a lot of grief, the difference between going to a church and a cemetery. The energy is different. That influence is going to color our emotions and color our responses. It's huge. It's huge. Then we can
Okay. Can I add to that?
Yeah.
So I totally know what you mean. The energies, depending on what building you're in or what is the discussion or what is about in that building or outside. And I have felt, when I went to go visit Ed and Lorraine's, were there, well, it was just Warren. Thank you. Where Ed Warren, is, you know, where his body is, at the cemetery there. Mm-hmm. I felt the archangels and the angels and the protective spirits. And I felt that, and that's because that's the realms that I like being in, is those higher realms. So it also depends on where a person's own vibration is, right. You know, us being our own point of attraction. So, and then before that, I was at the museum, and there's all these artifacts there and all these objects there that are from not good things, but right. I was connecting to the protection and the angels and Ed and, you know, all that. And so, it's important for people, like you're saying, to understand your emotions and to release the negative ones and be up in the higher level so that you can receive better guidance and better ways of living life.
When we are faced with an emotional crisis or some kind of a turning point, then some of this stuff will begin to unfold, unwrap before us so that we have some kind of a way to touch base and say, is this really what I want to do? That guidance is there if we're allowing it to come through and not expecting, okay, God's going to send down a rope and I'm going to climb up it, all right? No, sometimes yeah. It's like all God does is take the stone out of the way so you don't trip.
Yeah.
you're not going anywhere. You're still there, but you don't trip.
It's so, like focusing, right? Like
yes.
Focusing, like pinpointing all of a sudden, like you have to focus and be able to tune in to the guidance.
Instead of saying something like, I'm going to be here for the duration, I don't care if it kills me. Well, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, so watch it. If you say, I am open to receive the information that is for my highest good. So when you have this pit in your stomach, it says leave the room, and you feel like you're getting goosebumps and you're getting a cold sweat. Listen.
More
to
anxiety, your solar plexus is tight.
Yes. Yep. Leave the room, or headache, or you smell smoke or something and it doesn't make any sense and you can't figure out why, or something crashes to the ground outside and you have to leave. You know, it's like, how many ways can we get some kind of a clue and continue to avoid the signs? And sometimes it has to happen that you avoid it and you'll get a second chance. Other times it's like, okay, three strikes and you're out. You're not listening. You're not paying attention. We can't do anything with you, kiddo.
Right. Yes, exactly. We tried. Yeah. We tried telling you. You have to listen to your intuition.
Sometimes that goes to a near-death experience where then all of a sudden the floodgates open. You come back and you have so much more awareness because you have a second chance to figure out the pieces of the puzzle. You weren't done yet. You still have stuff here you can share and you can help other people now that you've got a different piece.
Yeah. You talking about that is part of what I wanted to bring up or mention is, in my journey with knowing that there's these non-physical beings of light out there that want to teach us about the ways to live a really good life, that they have the truth to offer, was from a book that I found. I don't remember, it was like 2005, 2006 or so, maybe 2007, The Selfful Life by Peg Abernathy. Mm-hmm. And her journey into connecting with guides was after a near-death experience.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, that is their way.
Yep.
It wasn't your way. It wasn't my way. Mm-hmm. My way was similar to you, where I wanted to, I was in a paranormal investigation team in 2006, and I was in Southern California, and one of the women taught me how to do a meditation to connect with my spirit guides. Mm-hmm. I was like, spirit guides, that's neat. I want to do that. And so it was a very quick, you know, she said, you know, sit still, close your eyes, breathe white light around you, focus, and then imagine you're sitting at in your sacred space, and that you're imagining a light coming towards you. Can you see what it looks like? Is there a message? It was kind of basic.
Yeah.
And then so I imagined being in the Santa Cruz Mountains, one of my favorite places, in this specific spot. And I was leaning up against a redwood tree. And then all of a sudden, this was within less than a minute, like my first time doing this. And I went into like a deep concentration, like I imagined when I played my super competitive sports, where you just are in the zone and you're super focused and you tune out everything else and you're just super tuned in. So I did that. And then, so I'm imagining sitting against this redwood tree. And then all of a sudden I saw, like in my mind's eye, a bear walked in front of me, and then a buck, and then a deer. Mm. And then I heard, and as I was coming out of it, because I was like, whoa, what's going on? I heard a man's voice say inside my head, which you describe that too in here in your book, mm-hmm. about it, the voice is coming from inside your head. Like, to me, I think of it like there's a microphone or something in the middle of your head. And it was a man's voice, and he said the word guarded. And so for me, and it took some time to process it all, you know, some different years and like studying different, you know, continuing my spiritual studies and, you know, all that, that he was letting me know that he was like my guardian spirit guide, and that these animals were like my guardian spirit guide animals. And, you know, there's more to it. So I kind of had a shamanic experience, but it was more like spirit guide exercise, you know?
Yeah.
So similar sort of, you know, in to it, where you're wanting to like meditate so that you can kind of for self-actualization, and also it was so that I can like know what my like at the time I called it my psychic abilities were. Mm-hmm. Because I had so many since I was a little kid, like precognition and dreams coming true, and the phone would ring, and I would, you know, this was way before caller ID. I worked at a dental office.
Yeah.
And I would know what patient was calling before that they would answer. And like, you know, I, you know, just different things like that. And so when I found this book, The Selfful Life, in the back of the book, she has a lot of her channeled messages to us, mm-hmm. to people,
yeah.
from the spirit guides, saying ways to live a good life. And one of the things that really made sense to me was they talked about drinking room temperature water, that's the best for you. And like my years of sports, that it made complete sense to me. And so this knowing that there were these, like, I don't know what I, how to describe it, but people of the non-physical, there to give us help. And then I wasn't a religious person, but I know I must have had some maybe past life possible religious background, because this idea, like, is it okay that I'm talking to people that are, and then I say in quotes, dead.
Right, you know? I know, yeah. Like,
yeah. All that stuff. So I wanted to mention that book to you because, you know, that when you then start receiving the messages yourself, it's such a wonderful experience. And yeah, it's kind of beyond words because mm-hmm. it's, you know, it makes you feel so connected and loved, and it's just wonderful. And, you know, so what do you, you know, add to that?
My influence was a woman named Pat Rodegast, and she channeled Emmanuel. And then I also, Sanaya Roman and Dwayne Packer, who wrote Opening the Channel, I was reading that book and I was doing meditation, and it was a very specific meditation, and I heard, we are here. And I called my grandmother, grandma, I got something. And they said, we are here. And the minute I heard that, I shut down. I'm like, oh. And she said,
okay.
Because they said, yeah. They said, we. I was expecting an I, you know, I wasn't expecting a group. And she said, go slow.
Okay. Did she say that to you because that she wanted you to feel comfortable with it, or was she wasn't sure who we was?
No, it was more or less that just take your time. Don't rush into this. And one of my friends, when she died, she appeared across. I'm doing traffic in the morning, and all of a sudden I'm seeing this. It's like the old TV screens when they had that white fuzz, you know, after the programming. I'm seeing this form, a body shape across from me, which is about 3.5-4 feet away from me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm in the middle of a traffic report and here this is. And so I'll tune in later. And I asked her, is there something you would like to tell me? You know, what would you like to say? And she said, don't rush. It goes by fast. Just don't rush. Cool. So the message that I continue to get is you don't have to hurry. Even, you know, if you're going to be late, it was the right time. It's a
Ooh,
way of life, a way of living, mm-hmm. is don't rush, mm-hmm. just trust. And so the anxiety goes away. The push goes away. The fear goes away. You just, all of a sudden, things make sense. Going back to the channeling.
Yep.
It has evolved to, I'm not necessarily asking, am I doing this right? I'm asking, what can I do? And how can I be more receptive and not block the message? So when I write, and I did this recently on a blog post leading up to history and reflection and leading times, I have the language now that I didn't have when I first started doing the channeling and then also doing the news broadcasting, because the broadcasting gave me a way to be more concise, because I would have to have a 60-second news item and there would be maybe eight stories in that 60 seconds with a kicker.
Wow.
So when I write, and that's what I've got the Talking to Night Lights blog that I do, I'm still picking up daily topics. And right now it's the crisis that's happening for us in America. There are other people who listen to this shows from different parts of the world. And I appreciate that. That's we learn from each other.
Yeah.
But we have so many things that have been asking along the way in the past 20 years. Can't we get along? Can't we be nicer? And we're continuing to go the opposite direction. So until we hit that far end of the spectrum, we're not going to bounce forward. In the meantime, channeled response with this post, I ask, okay, so where are we going? This was what I thought was really interesting, because they do this in a way with me that always is multi-layered. We tend to, as humans, as people who are linear, look for things in a straight line and, you know, expect A, B, C, D, E. Spirit goes A, 6, 24, triangle, Q, 8 ball, you know, and you have to figure out which way's up. So here's the response. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be a very confusing time. People are going to wonder which way's up. And that's exactly what is intended. Study the Sphinx. And there's a reference for this. Okay, so hold that Sphinx thought. And we go into Egyptian history and the characters. Some are being misinterpreted intentionally. It's a little more romantic than intended. The Egyptians were a brutal culture and no romance about it. The Aztecs, also a brutal culture. We're talking human sacrifice, okay? So that would be the brutal part. Some believe the story is beautiful and it's the furthest thing from the truth. And not because it's negative, but because it doesn't value all of the spectrum of humans and animals and plants, the whole nine yards. Okay, so that's what is meant with that.
Okay.
But what happened at that point was that the culture then turned on the people, because they were the highs and the lows, all right? So you see people as chattel, you see them as necessary cogs in a wheel. Those cogs eventually go a different direction, okay? It says, all is well, study the Sphinx. So again, there's a Sphinx reference. And there's a lore there that mirrors what is coming. So stay strong, don't follow the crowd. Everyone is judged by their own specific actions, not by some court of law we have here, but by our own angels, guides, guardians, and we are given help as we require it in the way that is best for each and every one. There's a huge shift coming that nullifies the results. Surprise and a shock. It's in the cards. All have been exposed. And the deal is, when you go to look at the Sphinx, because I then add that because I'm thinking, what the heck? What the heck? I'm supposed to go look at the Sphinx. So I'm looking at Sphinx pictures on the web. Well, that isn't what it was about. What it was about is a story. Edgar Allan Poe, The Sphinx. It's a short story, and it is about a guy who is living near the Hudson River for 2 weeks during a cholera epidemic in 1832. He's reading a book overlooking a scenic view of the Hudson River, and there's this giant beast approaching. It's the way my guides work. They look for things outside of the linear context to say, here's another drama that you might superimpose over your current situation to get your baggage out of the way and give yourself an overview that is less trauma drama and more, how can I be a better person in this situation? So that story is worth reading.
Yeah.
So the first thing you think of, oh, I've got to go look at the pictures, which is what I did. And then this came up and there's a little chuckle from the guide saying, ha, ha, ha. And it's always a ha, ha, ha. Nothing here is what it seems. And that's the best thing I can say about this, is we have to continue improving, evolving, looking for different ways to get out of the isolation, the self-imprisonment we put ourselves in here when we say there's no way out of this situation. There's always a way. It's whether it's comfortable or not.
And, you know, if more people want to learn how to do this, your book is kind of a guiding to people to be able to know that how to do it.
It's just a way to listen, a way, you know, one way. If there's something in there that would help, it's the fact that there are little messages around us all the time. And I happen to see it with a blinking light. And then I continue to tune in my own abilities, you know, to listen to dead people. And they said, it's just energy. Give yourself a break. Don't be so dramatic.
And as your beginnings of your contact was starting, and then you were realizing that you have one that you call the energy, but then you also have these other energies that have come in. One was a Native American that seemed, right? Because he said, aho.
They're whoever we want them to be, because they have to appear to me in a way that I can contextualize it.
Okay, that makes sense.
So I don't ever, you know, I might get a template, but I also know that this is my language and these are my views and my scenery. So it makes sense to me, but anybody who does this has to learn their own terminology and their own, you know, their own, like when you describe the animals that you connected to. I had the same kind of thing with spirit guides as animals, and in my own experience being another animal, understanding how they mean when they say transmigration of soul. You can be anything at any time. And I was in, and have been in several circumstances in animal bodies. I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing.
I wondered about that, actually. You, in chapter 3, you say the intent is to illustrate a process of awakening to the ability to channel by tuning into what sounds like a fractured broadcast and gradually improves with daily practice to become a clear transmission. And I say that, I want to tell you that because in those beginnings for me, I had heard about, and you talk about it, you word it as called channeled writing. And that's, I received a little exercise of how to do channeled writing, where she said, okay, just, you know, have your notepad and your pen and go into sort of a meditative state. And then when something comes to you, then write it down. And so at first I was just, I didn't know what I was doing. I was sitting up on my bed, you know, Indian style with my notepad and pen. And I went into a meditative state and I was trying to figure out how to get the channeling to start. This was after I had heard the man say the word guarded.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know, maybe a few weeks, a month, I'm not sure after. And I started like writing like what my dream life would be, just kind of to give my mind something to think about. And then the second that I finished, like the second I had nothing left to write, I all of a sudden heard the same sort of in my head, like a microphone in the middle of my head, almost like when you tune the radio and you're tuning the radio and you notice that you're coming on to the next song and you can kind of hear it. So you tune it. I was hearing a kind of a blah, 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 blah kind of thing. And then I tuned in more. And then I heard like a voice say, I only heard like half of the sentence, but it was like, this is heaven. You're going to be all right. You know, something like that. Uh-huh. And it was a different voice. And to me, it sounded like even a higher vibration or like coming from a different higher realm. Not that my spirit guide was a high realm, but this was even a higher realm or, you know, different. And just as I was saying that, I just felt like lightheaded for a second. So that felt like a little bit of a confirmation. But after that, though, I started having, when, you know, the reason, you know, like I was saying, I was meditating was so that I could know what my inner senses were, what were my abilities. And I was having a whole bunch of different ones. My wanting to kind of go back to where I was and do this work is, you know, your work and you talking about this has inspired me to kind of want to go back and continue developing my communication and my relationship on a deeper and easier level with my spirit guides, like how you are doing it.
That's the thing about this is that the whole point is just to say anyone can do this and what's right for you is right for you. Nobody else gets to call your right.
Yes.
So if that's how you feel, then that's what you have to go with, because that's fuel, that's energy, that's inspiration. And that is the way that your heart speaks to you and says, I'm ready. And so, you know, that's sometimes we need these little prompts to say, hey, you can do it too, or whatever you're doing, if it resonates, then it gives you permission to go completely in a different direction, but with more enthusiasm and more self-assurance that you've got your own way and you know where you're going.
Right. So you started this in 97 and it's still happening, mm-hmm. your nightlight.
Yeah.
Every day. And then you still have your automatic writing that you do.
Mm-hmm.
But then are you able to connect just without having to do automatic writing?
Yeah, it's always there. I do the automatic writing and sometimes I save it, sometimes I don't. I mean, I've got 5 or 6 different notebooks that I'll put it on a scratch piece of paper. And I used to, before I had a huge experience in 2009, keep it very much more organized. And then I got information during that time when I felt a time shift and was shown that we are on different timelines by an interesting...
Let's hear that story.
I got to stop now. So we're going to take a break between segment number 1 and number 2. We didn't even get into Trisha's experience with Bigfoot, which is also really cool because that's ongoing and happening where she is. And she's included videos, so I'm going to tag those as well. In the meantime, yes, this experience for me was a life changer. What I was given was that there are transdimensionals who can influence our reality. This isn't ET. In some ways, I thought it was, but this is beyond that. And it also includes the nightlight, the energies, the entities I begin speaking with through the nightlight. It isn't just the flickering and blinking. That's how I know it's connected and everything is ongoing. But there is another communication that's happening with that. So it's more than just lights flickering. And sometimes that I don't make that clear enough, but that's what it is. So we're going to take a break from this portion of the interview and get into the next segment where we talk about other paranormal things and this big life shift that happened for me in 2009, giving me a whole different perspective on reality and time. Time is so much more interesting and others can change it for us. We can change it ourselves, but when they change it, it gives us an idea that we don't have to be stuck in a timeline. This is beyond our science. But when you experience it, then you have a different awareness, a different interaction, engagement with life. It doesn't make it easier. In some ways, it's a whole lot more complicated, but it's sure interesting. So Trisha Brown and I will continue in the next segment with the other elements of the paranormal and her experiences with Sasquatch, where she is right now. Thanks for listening, and check the links in the description for the show. Curious is just the beginning. We need a whole lot more of that. When people finally figure that out, there'll be a whole lot more interest in what's going on around us, less interest in what we can do to other people, and more interest on how we can evolve ourselves.